Yes. Man, now that's a real shame when folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that.
Jeff and Al in the morning. This weekend, Mormon. G-Off and Al. G-Off.
Still to this day, the best rap I've ever petitioned to be made. That was great.
It's our theme song.
I couldn't stop laughing, man.
Well, it's our theme song.
Maroney.
I might just have to keep using it every single week.
He kept asking me. He's like, so we went. For those of you who don't know, we went on Fiverr and just paid a guy $5 to make that rap. I thought it was brilliant, and it was just some random dude like get with this boy was his username or something like that, or Heavy Rider or something like that. And he was like, so wait, you're a Mormon and you want to rap? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, what kind of stuff should go in a Mormon rap? And I was like, well, we want to
not the Mormon rap. We're
a funny podcast. We talk about like the dumb stuff that comes up in Mormon news a lot, things like that. He's like what? What kind of stuff? This is all over email. And I'm like, well, we've talked about like what casserole you're going to bring to your general conference party, and the weird Mormon proms that happen in Idaho and things like that. And he's like, bro, I got this. So then he came back with this work of art. Thank you very much. Tremendous.
The question is, do we invest the small fee to get it up there on iTunes, Spotify, everything else to make it the hit it deserves to be?
What is the fee, Jeff? I'll pay it.
About $15 for a single, I believe. And I can get us digitally distributed to every channel you can imagine.
Obviously, I want to pay that. Can I Venmo you right now?
You can Venmo me right now. I will happily set it up.
All right, it's done. I'm Venmoing you $15. Make it happen.
We have to name the song, though. It has to have a title.
You are the pro at these things. $15 to be famous. Can we be listed as artists in this?
So,
I want to.
Yeah,
this
I just feel bad
Mormons
for the other guy
and Jeff,
but hey.
And Al. Yeah. No,
you want it to be this week? No, or should it be this week in Mormons
money.
Featuring? We could say it's featuring so-and-so.
Oh, yeah. He is our Snoop Dogg. That's exactly it. This is like the modern-day Wiggle, Wiggle, Wiggle.
This is our Snoop Dogg?
And he is our
West
Snoop Dogg.
West Coast. Yeah.
Wiggle, Wiggle, Wiggle.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're going for. Well, I'm glad you've all been able to go along this ride with us. This is about how we paid $5 for a terrible rap song that we think is hilarious.
And that view may
not be shared by everyone. Maybe not.
You might all hate it, but I think what I'm going to do is just get some other songs. If there's anyone out there, we might look at Fiverr. I could go for like a dubstep type theme song, maybe an electronic.
You're going to make it Jeff, do the Twim album.
I want like a full arsenal of Twim theme songs that I can rotate.
You and I have a few songs we've recorded in days past. I believe
a country one. I could find the original chords from the This Week in Mormons, but I could have it redone as an epic metal song.
Because
it's in a minor key.
I'm ready to sing again. I'll bring my William Shatner tones, and we will record a full album.
Oh, that could be awesome too. But only if it's William Shatner's first album. The second one's good, but the first one is when he combines two disparate ideas, and it's amazing.
When he was singing with Spock.
It's called The Transformed Man, and you'll have part that's his original.
Is this
prose.
The one when he's singing with Spock, and Spock was really sure he was really good?
I don't think Spock's on that one. I'm not sure. Leonard Nimoy. All I know is he'll sing his original work, and then he'll transition into something from King Lear, and somehow they're related.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, I've listened to that one.
Yeah, you should. Everyone should. It's
Anyway, Jeff, how are you? Have you been?
I'm doing well. I don't know if any one particular thing is going down, but stuff's just fine.
What have you done with your week that the good Lord has blessed you with?
What have I done with my week? I keep things on a calendar. That's the way I can tell you what I've done with my life.
How are you set apart as an Elders Quorum president now?
Oh yeah, we did that even before we talked last week. I would not have gone public.
So you're official.
Yeah, I'm a fish.
How is your first week as the big EQP?
I find that there is much to learn because I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing, really. I mean, I'm learning, obviously. You know, we had our first presidency meeting, went to ward council this week, things like that. I've been to ward councils before, not the end of the world. It is a bit different getting acclimated into a role like this in a family ward, which I've never done. I'm very accustomed to ward council type stuff in a singles ward.
Where it's all jokes and you're just trying to hit on the girl next to
you. Pretty much. But in this case, you know, you're talking about we spent 20 minutes trying to figure out how to get people to go to Steak Temple Night more. And then the bishop thought the remedy was food. And so then he published a list of all the restaurants that are near the DC Temple.
If Jesus doesn't get you there, you know, a chicken broth sort of thing with a little gravy.
So it's been fine.
Maybe some short ribs.
There's stuff I'm getting used to. I have to meet with a guy in the steak presidency tonight.
Wait, so if someone else was coming into it for the first time, what has been the most difficult?
I don't know if any one thing has been difficult. I'm realizing we harp a lot on, you know, home teaching and getting it done, and that's always ongoing in the church, right? But what I didn't realize is how much...
That's the forever chit-chat.
But I didn't realize how much of a hassle or a struggle reporting can be. That's what I'm learning right now. It's one thing to get
people... You want to build a tool to make it easier, don't
it's
you?
One thing, yeah, to get people to do home teaching.
What if there was an iPhone app for reporting your home teaching?
Yeah, I don't know why the church hasn't actually done that.
Jeff, we could build this.
Why are
no
home teaching
one would
assignments,
ever pay for it.
Why are home teaching assignments not incorporated into LDS tools? They just pushed a beautiful, beautiful update, but that is not a feature.
Oh, that'd be a dream,
as much
huh?
as I can tell, anyway. I'm looking right here. No, you got your meeting houses, your calendar, lists, but no, they should give you those things. Anyway, but I've realized that reporting is a big issue. A lot of people might even do home teaching, but they just don't get back to the requests for it. So I think that's going to be a different challenge than I realized. Since you asked.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I remember that being kind of difficult. Because you have three main parts to an elders quorum, right? You have the activities that you're doing with your elders quorum. You have the home teaching that needs to happen. And then you have like the day-to-day, you know, what are we doing Sunday? Who's giving the lesson?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you as elders quorum president have to like deal with any special issues that come up. And so between those three things, I mean, you divvy that up between your counselors and stuff and make it all go. There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. That's the other thing I'm learning, like what focuses do I need to put upon my counselors, blah, blah, blah. So there's plenty of things I'm learning and trying to work into things and just get it going. I feel like I think the president before is awesome, but I think because of some limbo, a couple things cooled off a little bit. So it's really like I feel like I'm starting with a pretty clean slate, which can be good. But at the same time, there are a few areas where I feel like I'm just picking up a baton and kind of running with it. I feel like I'm having to forge the baton, if you will.
You are forging the baton.
Forging
so
the baton.
Later.
But it's been good. It's been good. It's an adventure. We'll see what happens with it. How are you doing?
I'm delightful. So I finished my quilt. I've been making a quilt.
I saw this.
I've owned a quilt company for 6 years. I decided it was high time. I tried it out.
Now, here's something I don't get. There's pictures of you with it. Did you finish it before you flew back from Kansas from Missouri?
I did.
Oh, but because they were only pushing it like yesterday and today that you did it. So I was confused.
Well, I finished it. So I finished it Sunday night and then flew out Monday afternoon and wrote it up and sent it over. We go as quick as we can.
Sure.
So I finished that, and that was actually delightful. I accidentally, like, I'm so cheap that I was like, the pattern called for like 1 1/4 of layer cakes are called 10 packages.
Oh,
I
know
squares.
The layer cakes. Yes, sir.
I went ahead and made it with the full two.
No,
it turned into a ginormous quilt, and then it was fine until I got to the binding part. Binding is a dirty.
It's the worst.
For all you men out there that are big into quilting, I know I'm preaching to the choir when I say binding, right, guys? I'm pathetic. Anyway, so we did that. I flew back to Salt Lake City. I haven't been back here in several weeks. I think like 6 weeks since
it's
I've been here
while,
last, outside of stopping through on a drive out from Baltimore. And Salt Lake in the summer, very nice. I'm excited to be back. I slept in my own bed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in my chair watching my FIFA on my TV. It's delightful.
And Steve must have a blast when you're gone, though. Let's be honest.
I'm pretty sure roommate Steve does have a blast while I'm gone. I came home to my bathroom light being disassembled, and he'd raided all the light bulbs out of there. We live in an apartment where you just email the repair guy and say, hey, I need you to come fix my bulbs. No, it was late at night. He needed light, so he took apart my light over my vanity in the bathroom. He takes the shield thing off, pulls it down, robs the light bulbs. I come home to I've been cannibalized. My bathroom's been cannibalized. I was like, Steve, what was this? He's like, well, I needed a light. I was like, you couldn't just use my bathroom? Or a light bulb from the four extra lamps we have sitting in the living room? He's like, no. No, needed yours out of your bathroom, buddy.
Steve is like, you couldn't have, the best.
Couldn't have just emailed our lady and said, hey, come fix this in the morning? He's like, I just really needed them.
Okay.
Well, I think there's something nefarious. I think he's been renting out my possessions while I've been
he's
gone.
He's probably
honestly.
Been subletting, which is what I would do.
Absolutely, yeah. When I came home and like the sink was full of dishes and trash everywhere, and I was like, I came home and it was just funny. It was one of those things. Well, you know, like if you knew somebody was coming, you'd clean up. But like he's been alone for 6 weeks. He was in his natural habitat.
Yeah, but are you better now about not leaving things in the sink? I mean, you've left food in a fridge for months. I've been there. You've left food in a sink for months.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, okay, just making sure.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying it was funny to walk in and have that moment of like, you caught me. All right, you got me. I hate doing dishes just like the next man, and there they are.
But he did it.
No, Steve's great. I've had roommates past where that's been a genuine problem. Steve is not.
Steve's a good guy. Steve's a good guy.
Yeah. A delightful man. He's been on the show. You know him. Anyway, there's that going on. I had a good buddy that went through the temple for the first time. He's on his way to the Mexico Tampico mission. And I was able to fly back and attend that temple session with him. You know what's funny about that? It's always interesting to me going through with somebody for the very first time, like remembering back to that moment when you went through and you know, just what you were thinking and what was going through your head. And I got to say, I'm really glad that we have the new temple videos, because the old ones were like, I mean, they were like paper mache puppets being held with strings, you know, the beginning part of the movie. It was just so made in the 70s, just very ancient. I remember seeing that and just being like I had two thoughts. One, this is okay, this is interesting. And two, could we not afford a little bit of special effects department? Could we not do that? And so now in the new one, very well done. It's delightful to watch. And so I think
and you know what would have made it worse? Because, you know, we had a gap there where, you know, we used to have the two movies, the one that was made in 89 and the other was 90, I think. But we got rid of the one from 90 for some reason, the one with the blonder Eve. And so we had a stretch
Eve.
There where the only one available to us was the one.
And the brunette Eve. What a
was
hottie,
the one with
huh?
Michael Ballum, right? And that was it. And I feel for anyone who went through for the first time and that was the only one. Because that one of those two was, I think...
No, I love that one. That Eve was way hotter than the blonde Eve, let's be honest. Can we say that? I feel like we can.
We cannot say
she
that,
was
actually.
Definitely
my apostate
better looking.
Meter is going like this.
Do, do, no, do, no, do, Jeff.
Do, do, do. So, I think it is. I'm with you on that one. I mean, I would... I'm glad when I went through for the first time I saw the other one of the old two... And then the first time I saw
the blonde Eve.
The first time I saw, the first time I saw the Michael Ballum one, I was like, "What?" And my immediate thought was, "I'm glad this wasn't the first one I saw."
I'm glad this one was not.
And I had a hard time with the temple in the first place, so that might have made it even worse. I don't know.
Yeah, you kind of get to the end. You kind of get to the end, and you're just like, "Huh? Okay. Huh?
Huh?
I don't know." It makes sense. Once you give it enough time, it makes great sense and it becomes delightful. But in the beginning, yeah.
Speaking of temples, apparently the work is progressing on the Paris, France temple.
Are you talking about the temple socks?
No. They're building a temple in Paris that looks more like a YMCA, but they're building it. Elder Anderson.
Oh, this is...
Yeah, Elder Neil L. Anderson was out there.
Where are you
and
seeing
he was.
This?
They must have changed the design a little bit. Interesting. Now, anyway, it looks like there's going to be no spire on it for some reason. I don't know why. But I guess they're progressing. It's going forward. They're excavating right now. They're building, laying the foundation.
It does kind of look like a YMCA.
Right? It's a,
just nice. Some changing rooms in there, some racquetball courts, some baptismal fonts.
Yeah, I don't know why they went with that design. I don't know if it was out of necessity.
All good things.
Either way, Paris had a long time before they were able to get a temple. So not because of the church stinking, French law. But now it's okay. So good for us.
Yeah, I just thought it was that. Never mind. I was just going to say something mean about Paris, France.
Say it. Say it right now.
No, Jeff.
Do it.
It's lost.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Say it.
Five.
Say
four,
it.
Three.
Hey, did you get to the season two finale of The West Wing yet? As an aside.
No, I'm on my way.
Okay.
I'm kind of in that slow meandering part.
What you do is you text me when it happens.
Where CJ is just angry all the time.
That doesn't change.
In my mind, I'm like, if any of my employees ever talked to me that way, I would fire her. Why are you not firing her, Toby Ziegler?
But CJ and Danny? Who needs Ross and Rachel when you can have CJ and Danny? Am I right?
Danny disappeared in the second season.
He comes in and out, but let me tell you, that's the best.
He comes back?
Oh.
I was just thinking about that the other day. I was like, they got rid of the annoying woman, and then Danny's gone. They didn't like the love.
Oh, no, you can't get rid of Timothy Busfield. You can try, but there's no way to put down Timothy Busfield. He's the man.
To quote Danny, okay.
Yeah. Well, let's getting in some of our other top story this week. Elder Holland went to Cuba.
That's what you've been seeing go around in the news.
What you
Elder
probably
Holland's
have not been able
in Cuba,
to avoid
the work goes on. That's what you've been seeing.
That's been the big news of the week, everyone. Elder Holland in Havana, La Habana, Cuba. He's been hanging out.
He just
out.
Went there to hang out, right? He wore his linen pants with a linen shirt.
Yeah.
And was trying to deal heroin. So it fit right in.
Yeah, and in the process, organized the second branch in the country of Cuba.
That was it. I knew it was one or the other.
He's using the heroin money just to pay for his family's expenses when he dies.
He wasn't allowed to use tithing money to go into Cuba. That's a rule. That's one of the sanctions that the church has put on Cuba.
It's hard. This is just Breaking Bad at the apostolic level. That's all it is.
It's coming. It's coming.
It's called Breaking Pack-er.
On once Granite Flats goes bust, the BYU channel needs something to take its place.
Anyway, the church is not registered in Cuba, but we do have a friendly relationship with the government. Like, they allow us to be there. Oh, we're not sneaking around like in, say, China. We've been there since 2004, and so now we have our second branch. Obviously, I don't think missionaries are there. I imagine they're only pushing forward because of just local membership, just doing its thing. And someday maybe we'll be allowed there if Cuba relaxes laws and stuff like that.
All right. So, yeah, that might happen. That might happen.
No, but
that'll be exciting. And also, through Mexico, we can travel there now. I want to go with Elder Holland to Cuba.
I believe you can actually go there straight from the States if you go through the right channels, but I'm not.
Hold on. I'm looking. Hold on. Kayak.com. Let's see what happens. Traveling from Salt Lake City to Cuba.
Uh-huh. This is very interesting for our listeners.
Well, no, I'm sure they're... Brazil, Cuba, Portugal? No. Cuba, Missouri? No. There's no Cuba. It doesn't know Cuba. What's the airport in Cuba? Havana.
Havana. We've seen Havana from a boat before, if that helps.
Kayak does not recognize my desire to travel to Cuba.
Well,
therefore, it's not a real thing.
It doesn't exist. It's we should have taken that after the Spanish-American War. Talk about America's biggest failing.
We should have. Let's talk about Kate Kelly real quick.
Must we? Okay, let's do it.
We've gotten a lot of Kate Kelly in the last couple of weeks. We spent a lot of time on her last week. The resulting news.
Yes, tell me.
Is that she has been excommunicated. John DeLynn has not, right?
John DeLynn's entire procedural is not, it's not happening for another couple of weeks. His stake president said, let's take a step back and cool off and then visit this in about a month.
That's what he said?
He wanted, his actual term he used was to de-escalate the situation. Because John DeLynn started whining to mainstream media about his tough life. There's no love lost for John Dolan for me, but I have a hard time separating that from my journalistic needs.
Sure, yeah. So Kate Kelly was excommunicated, received the email. If you've taken the opportunity to watch her interview, was that Peggy Fletcher Stack that interviewed her?
That was today, or maybe it was yesterday. Yeah, actually, it was today, I believe. Or was it?
And if you've taken the chance to watch that, I mean, it's just sort of they just kind of ask her some very generic questions. It's better feedback on the situation.
I find it to be an incredibly awkward interview. Peggy Fletcher Stack is a seasoned professional in doing stuff like this, and it is an incredibly stilted and just strange. Like, I can't tell if Peggy Fletcher Stack thinks that Kate Kelly's full of it. That's what I'm honestly wondering while this interview is going on.
First, I take issue with you calling Peggy Fletcher Stack a seasoned reporter.
I knew you would, Jeff, but I went out on a limb and decided to go with the label anyway.
Had to give it a shot. Yeah. The questions were, they were like, so are you happy or sad right now? I'm sad. I knew you'd say that. I felt like that was it. Yeah, it's just kind of, yeah, it is a weird interview. It plays
well, not
weird.
Just sad. It's just there's a lot of, just lots of awkward pausing. And
so if you haven't had the opportunity, Jeff put up the letter from the bishop to Kate Kelly.
Which, for the record, we would not be posting. But Kate Kelly makes everything public, and so all bets are off, just to cover ourselves.
Yeah.
We believe these should be private matters that none of us are talking about.
Absolutely. Well, and in the letter, I mean, it's very, like, it's just clear to me that, I feel bad for the bishop in this situation. Yeah, obviously you feel bad for Kate Kelly in the essence that she has been excommunicated, and that's not easy for anybody, especially somebody that wants to be in the church, right? That feels like they're doing what they should. The bishop in this situation, though, very, very clearly, I mean, he's an articulate guy. He says, here's the things that are the trouble for us. It's not, thinking that women should have the priesthood does not get you excommunicated. Telling people that you think women should have the priesthood does not get you excommunicated. Anything around that line of thought or being having a different understanding of the gospel than someone else, none of that is going to get you excommunicated. The problem that they ran into is that she was actively trying to build an organization that was, pulling members away from the teachings of the church, saying that you need to believe like I do, right? You need to come over to this side of the fence. And I know in saying this that there are people in my friends list of Facebookians that genuinely disagree with that assessment,
uh-huh.
Right? They would disagree with the idea that she was doing anything wrong at all. For me though, man, it's like I look at how she's handled this of just like completely obstinate to any wrongdoing. There's no like, oh my gosh, this is not how I was intending to come across. I understand this would be bad. Yeah. Here's what I was trying to do, and it was in this area. There's none of that. It's all just, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And if you can't handle that, tough luck.
Yeah, right? I agree with that too. I think it baffles me that someone who is as clearly intelligent as Kate Kelly has failed, especially as a lawyer, to actually say, what's my end goal here? And how do I go about doing that with the audience I have? Like, I got into some, let's call them spirited debates with stupid audiences on the Mormon Hub, a Facebook group that I sometimes wonder why I follow, to be honest. I follow it because I like to see what other people think, even if I don't agree with them. But because I dared to suggest that while Ordained Women was effective, very effective, they had a meteoric rise, little over a year, and it's this huge impact, right? No one's going to take that away from them. But if their goal was to actually try to persuade everyday members of the church, those of us in the middle just kind of casually doing our thing, I think they completely failed in that regard because they did not consider that audience. Everything here has been playing to the base in a way. Like I described it as this was like Ordained Women took this like it was a primary election. And not a general election. There was no need to run to the middle and try and win adherence from the middle, which is really the only way you're going to affect change or not come off as a threat to the church.
You know what was interesting to me, too, is that in these proceedings, it was the six discussions of ordained womanness that they put out that was one of the big catalysts for.
I think so too. Yeah,
for this too. Well, and I when it came out, I was like, oh, this is kind of dumb. Whatever. Like, it didn't seem like a big deal to me. But the idea that they were producing sort of a curriculum to convince people over to their way of thinking, you know, is how it came across to this bishop, especially in his letter. And very easily, I mean, it's easy to see why that would be concerning now.
Yeah.
But that kind of surprised me. Of all the things that you know, that you'd point to, the six discussions were one of the big ones for them.
I think there's a blogger, Nylan McBain. I think she's very good. She's a feminist, but she's reasonable in her and pragmatic in her approach. And I appreciate that about her, where she's saying, like, we have goals and we need to raise the profile of women. But she agrees with a lot of us that the tactics of ordained women are what have gotten them in hot water, not the goal. And I don't know how many other times to reiterate that, because even Kate Kelly keeps saying that obviously the church is trying to quell free speech and one cannot express oneself, which is not what's happening here. It's just it's simply the tactics involved. But I like how Nylan actually describes the six discussions. I'll actually, if you don't mind, I can read a quote from an article of hers, which is pretty good. So she says there's the six discussions. Anyone from their teens remembers the missionary six discussions. And by naming the pamphlets as such, ordained women assumed a position of converting members to their own way of thinking through an explicit missionary effort. Also, the layout of the pamphlets uses a similar font and typographical structure as our official church materials, also suggesting that these discussions are to be honored and used similar to official materials. And then these discussions also included a promotional flyer, guidelines to promote the discussion groups through social media, and guidelines for starting a discussion group, suggesting usurpation also of official church meetings. And then I like that she says, more startling, however, was the cartoon graphics in each pamphlet. At the beginning of each, there's a cartoon that is clearly meant to depict Kelly's distinctive glasses and hair, and she is teaching a group of smaller cartoon women. So the effect is to suggest that Kate Kelly herself believes that the eternal structure of God's kingdom is not currently administered correctly by our prophets, and in the form of a church manual, she is recruiting others to this new doctrine. Close quote.
Yeah.
As they say in General Conference. And I think that hits the nail on the head, why six discussions could be so provocative. And because, like we even mentioned, they use the color scheme of the old six discussions. The exact same ones from one to six. And so it's very much seeming like it's trying to find its place in church curricula, which was
the things that are a little bit interesting to me are that so many. I mean, I feel like I want to write an op-ed piece that's Kate Kelly is not the spokesman you are looking for, right? Like, there's a lot of people that really really care about issues relating to this.
Yeah,
and they've attached themselves to Kate Kelly as though she is the leader that will take them to salvation, and she's not.
Yeah,
your issues. I mean, a lot of the issues that people have are, like, you know, women equality in the church. They're struggling with maybe their voice or dissenting ideas being represented in the church, or the ability to have free thought and thinking in the church. And they've attached all of that to this Kate Kelly experience and said, oh, obviously our church doesn't accept any of that because they've ousted Kate Kelly.
Which is not the case. And it's frustrating because I believe now, because of her excommunication, we are seeing polarization, which is very, very bad. I think you're seeing a lot of people who might have felt, you're seeing people drawn one way or the other. There's a lot of people now who have a lot of vitriol towards Kate Kelly, and a lot of people who now feel more supportive because she is a martyr. In a sense.
Yeah.
And what I hate, though, is I feel, I don't, how could someone not see this coming, though? It's almost as if, and this is sheerly conjecture, but that she knew this would be the path it would eventually go down, and she went along with it to be the martyr to her cause. I mean, because who would not assume this would get yourself in hot water at some point? And she's been so, let's face it, belligerent in the face of even just requests to not do this or that. And she could have toned down her language. She could have moderated her approach and made herself not seem like an outside organization trying to change the church from the outside, as opposed to one that could function within the mainstream. And I think that was the huge misstep right there. Huge. I mean, even if it was church PR requesting that ordained women not march on Temple Square a second time, and then they went ahead with it anyway, that's the moment you're flagged, and that's when they're going to be watching you more and more. And she just continued on her course because she wants to be true to herself. And I think it's fine to be true to yourself, but I like that she describes it as being inauthentic. And I saw one comment, I think, on Times and Seasons or something, where someone said, yeah, but isn't the point of our mortal experience to not be our authentic selves? Our point is to get ourselves in line with what Christ wants us to do. You know, it's not for me to get up and say the authentic Jeff Openshaw is a guy who has all the faults I naturally have and whatever else and temptations and who knows what else. That's not my goal, to be my authentic self necessarily. You know, my goal is to be who the Lord wants me to be in the long run.
So here's another side of the issue. There's a satirical movement called Restore Polygamy that came up. Jeff suggested we start a Allow Fornication
movement.
Allowfornication.org.
That's just true to my body, you know? Science tells me I'm supposed to be having sex.
Well, so here's the difficult, like, here's sort of the difficulty of the situation that's underlined by that, right? Let's say, you know, I have this great moment where I realize I should be fornicating right now. This is what I should be doing.
Yes.
Right? And I talk to all my 30-year-old single buddies, and we all believe that this is exactly where we should be. Where is the break in this dialogue that allows us to go to the church, say this is what we feel it should be, and where is the back flow of communication where I can say, oh, this isn't actually what it should be? That's the one piece that I feel like was missing from ordained women, is there was no room for an answer, right?
Yeah.
Outside of meeting their exact demands. And so I mean it's kind of a dumb little bit of satire, Restore Polygamy. I mean, it's clearly being facetious, as would be a Allow Fornication, right? We're not actually expecting to be allowed to fornicate now. That we think that's, you know, not real. But like, let's say I had that movement. Where do I have the channel built in for them to be able to say, okay, well, I really appreciate that, you know, you said a prayer and you felt like you should be able to have sex with your girlfriend. That's great. Don't. That's not okay. And we need you to not do it. And we need you to not try and convince other people that it is okay.
Yeah.
Right? And for me to be okay with that and walk away with that and say, all right, I get it. You know, I was just a randy young man, and that's how it went. That's the piece that was missing from the ordained women movement. And I know, as we're talking about this, there are listeners that are pulling their hair out with frustration due to our inability to see the real crux of the issue.
And we're men, so of course.
But I would hope
this week too. But
yeah. I mean, yeah. But can we not all see that there was an opportunity to deal with this in a way that would have avoided all of this, and those opportunities weren't taken? And I mean, from the get-go, there was no way for this to be a win-lose for anybody.
Yeah, and exactly.
Not to mention a win-win.
No, yeah, I mean, it was never going to be win-win. And that's why you have to wonder, how could someone not know? You know, someone would know it's not going to be win-win. And of course, it's frustrating. The thing to bear in mind is, I'm sad to see a lot of people who view this like we have, you know, cut off a... Honestly, you know, it's like we've cut off one of the diseased limbs of a tree or something like that, you know. And it's anyone being excommunicated. I know, like we talked before, Al, that you said, you know, it can be a positive thing, and it can be, and I agree with that. But I do think in cases like apostasy, this is more about protecting the church, protecting the purity of doctrine, and I'm speaking from the church's perspective, and taking care of those things. It is viewed like, sure, we'd love to have you come back in full fellowship, but sometimes excommunication is punitive. And sometimes it is about cutting someone off from being able to do what's perceived as further damage. And that's what I think this is in this case. I hope that, of course, Kate has the opportunity to come back. I find it interesting that she has said she plans to appeal her excommunication, which is fine. Go for it. But then she says she doesn't have any plans on working to get rebaptized until the church changes. And right there, I think, is a huge narrative disconnect from anything else. Because if you've said that your goal is to support the female ordination and you're working through the church's channels and you believe you are, then great. So then why would you say that this church that you love and hold so dear and is run by prophets, no, I'm not going to join it until they change at this point? That's a shift, in my opinion, from what I've seen her say. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate this happens to anybody. And whether it's – and like you said, Al, I mean, it's – so much of this could have been avoided, and it frustrates me. No one's saying the church is 100% is perfect in this, that Kid Kelly's perfect in this, but it's that I see a failure to put any of the onus on ordained women for having done a better job with this to keep themselves out of the hot water. And that –
What's interesting is all this has come to light. I mean, you can see that Kate Kelly's been very careful in her steps, right? She says, "Well, no, we've never talked face to face in all of this. We've never had a conversation face to face. They've never called me. They've never done any of that." And in the letter from the bishop, he says, "I wish you would have taken me up on the offer to reschedule when you could have been here in person. The offer for a private, you know, like secured video link where we could have spoken face to face, but you refused all of those, and that's unfortunate, right?" But but for her to tell her story the way she wants to tell it, she's had to, you know, politely decline any of these offerings that would have made this a little bit, I don't know, maybe more intimate.
I think she feels it would have made her look weak or something like that. And then, of course, as this has been spun to the media, as you might imagine, the media loves this stuff. I mean, the media loves the whole idea of ordained women. That's part of why they've done so well in the past year. Anything that makes the stodgy, conservative, glacially changing LDS church look bad, the media is very happy to report because it's fun. But the same thing, of course, they go out of their way to point that this was an all-male council excommunicating, you know, a feminist dissident and this. And it's always in how you shape it. And it is an all-male council, and I understand there have unfortunately been many cases in the church when even if someone's wanted to go to a disciplinary hearing, they've wanted to have someone with them, family members, and they're often denied that. And I don't know if that's official policy in the book or if that's just cultural policy that for some reason permeates. The same thing happened with Denver Snuffer. He wanted his kids to be there during the hearing so that they could see what it was like and what happened, and they would not allow it. And so I think he also refused to attend because he couldn't have family with him in a meeting like that. So before
we leave this, there's been a couple of articles on did the bishop follow the handbook in the situation with Kate Kelly's excommunication? There's a post over on Rational Face. It's a little bit slanted towards the opposing view, right? They immediately draw the parallel of you know, Christ and the Sadducees, the people in the Sanhedrin, where they rush to get him, and that's just like Kate Kelly.
Well, he does say, though, that he's not comparing Kate Kelly to Jesus.
Well, you can't compare Kate Kelly to Jesus
in the sense that
she
is a savior figure. That's all he's saying. He's not comparing her in the sense that she's worthy of worship. That's it.
So he goes through a couple of issues that he sees with handbook and timeline and all that stuff. And so maybe an appeal to a stake president will have some merit in that. Honestly, for anybody that's ever been a bishop, the doctrine around having a disciplinary council is very, very vague. There's not a lot in the handbook around like exactly what to do and how to make your decision and all that stuff. I mean, they rely very heavily on the Spirit. So I would have to suppose that they don't keep a very tight leash on the exact sequence of events that's supposed to happen. It's not, you know, it's not military-esque in that way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I saw another article that attested that the whole thing could have been a sham because she was charged on charges of apostasy, but when they excommunicate her for, quote, conduct contrary to the laws and order of the church. And so I saw a post that was saying, like, well, what is this? Those are separate charges from apostasy, and she was tried for charges that she wasn't even read. But the thing to bear in mind is in the manual, the notion of conduct contrary to the laws and order of the church is sort of the general jargon that's actually used in cases like this. And I think it's specifically because of things like this when it goes public so that some of the anonymity of the proceedings is preserved. Because I believe that conduct contrary to the laws and order of the church Yeah, that's. I mean, I think apostasy falls under that umbrella. I think I'm okay with it. I think we're grasping at straws to try to pick apart the entire letter. And also, I don't know if you noticed, but hard not to notice this when our listeners pointed this one out. When she talked to Peggy Fletcher Stack, Kate was clearly not wearing garments, and she appears to have already managed to buy, you know, sleeveless shirts. And you and I were laughing before because we were like, look at us caring about sleeveless shirts. We're so Mormon, right?
It's very modest. It's very modest dress. Like,
oh yeah, it's
fine
totally.
Looking outside of, there's no cap sleeves.
But it cracks me up because I feel like that's her still doing another shot across the bow saying, see, you men will not tell me what modesty is. Basically, and if I were in her position and I wanted to show contrition, which is
felt like maybe she was just a little warm and wanted a cooler dress.
But if I wanted to show
from
contrition,
Ross, dress for less.
Like, hey, I love the church and I believe in its teachings, because I believe ordained women has never addressed modesty as part of the problem. As far as I know, there's nothing that says the church's modesty stuff is also antiquated and we need to address that. So either this just says things to me. It either says that it either says that the concept of modesty was inherently tied for her, perhaps, into wearing garments, or it says that, you know, she's not on board with what's supposed to be modest for women in general, which is a different issue. And it sends the wrong message. That's the main thing. Regardless what you think about it, already
it's not reinforcing.
Already it tells people who are opposed to her, oh, look, she's been excommunicated and she's already wearing non-garment appropriate clothing. So clearly she was like waiting for that. These are all perceptions people are going to have.
So,
oh, well.
Somebody brought up in our comments in a very belligerent way that I thought was funny.
I think I know what you're getting at, and I thought it was funny.
But they asked, should Cliven Bundy then be excommunicated?
Absolutely, if only for being stupid.
If the issue that we take is that we don't like people that are sort of pulling members of the church away to a different line of thinking. I mean, so like the Cliven Bundy stuff. He is, as far as the government is concerned, is breaking the law.
Yeah, Cliven.
Right? Go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, Cliven Bundy, I mean, you remember, yeah, he's the grazing rights issues, but he refuses to even recognize the authority of the federal government. He says the land he's on is Nevada, under Nevada law, and he abides by that. That's kind of the main thing here.
And then he rallied support, which this is maybe where it's different. Either people rallied around him or he rallied the support. To all come out to his ranch and Ruby Ridge that sucker, man. They've got their guns. They're ready to rock. So why was he not called in to a disciplinary council? I wonder.
You mean because he's not abiding by the laws of the land?
Well, because he's trying to persuade others to come and support him in not abiding by the laws of the land. That's the piece that you could take issue with, right?
And the funny thing is they say, why hasn't the church done this? And the comment you have on here, they never will. He is a male white priesthood holder. So, folks, just to keep them some perspective here, John Dellen is also a white male priesthood holder. And he is being counseled. So I don't think – please quit attacking us white
males. And I know for
males.
A fact there have been tens of white male priesthood holders who have been excommunicated over the years. Maybe dozens, maybe.
Yeah. Also, white women. The real question is, have any minorities been excommunicated? That's the real question.
Yeah, you're not seeing any Mexican guys getting excommunicated, are you?
Didn't that one guy, though?
And,
remember we've reported
and
some...
And that's the bottom...
The church is racist against its own majority race. That's what it is.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I don't get the Clive. I don't get the Clive and Bundy thing, but your response was outstanding, because... This person leaves one comment, and then they left another one elsewhere that mentions Cliven Bundy again. So Al's just like, I feel like you want to talk about Cliven Bundy. Is this true?
I just said that. Then the church PR people kind of we're moving on.
Yeah, sure.
Almost.
Yeah,
we're trying. We're they released a statement on blogging, or more like online discourse, and said, we are okay with online discourse. We're okay with people having different points of view and having these discussions. We understand that it's a real thing. So, thank you, Jessica Moody.
What do you think, though? I do understand that a lot of people are frustrated because I still think the line is not clear. I think we've been able to establish...
Well, here's why the line's not clear. Is because if I put something on a blog, and I state very strongly my opinion, for instance, that church schools should be abolished. I still think they should.
Ah, yeah. That's a good post.
You put that out there. Inherently, that's written in a way that you're trying to convince people to your point of view.
Yeah.
Right? That's why we write.
That's why we write, to persuade. Yeah.
And so, that's why it gets a little muddy, right? Because if you have a point of view, let's say ordained women is my point of view, and I write it, I'm writing to persuade you to see my point of view. That being said, I don't feel like in writing that I've done anything to marshal troops or try to persuade anybody out to leave the church or anything like that. But I mean, there's instances. We know there's instances where people are getting letters or having, you know, just being kind of the dialogue is being opened around stuff that they're writing online or comments and posts and things like that.
I mean, go ahead.
I don't know. I feel like we don't want to water down any you know, deep thinking or alternative thought in the church. I feel like that is definitely a mistake. And I don't feel like that's what the church is trying to do. I feel like they're sort of in this flux of trying to figure out, like you said, Jeff, where's the line?
Yeah, I think even the church is trying to figure it out. Because you've got cases like this where ordained women is more obviously organized. And you could also argue if it's come from Salt Lake or not, that Kate Kelly's reach extended beyond her stake, which could also take it to a higher level. John Dellen, very similar in this case. I mean,
is it John Dellen or John Dellen?
I hear different things, so I'm just changing it up. The next one's going to be okay. John.
You're batting lefty Dellen. Right now. That's fine.
John Dellen. Similar there, because I don't think John's tried to rally to a particular cause, but I think you have to approach it with some subjectivity, but he does carry weight, and he has people who listen to him in the sense of as if he's a leader. And so,
well, for instance, with us, right? If we were continually, I guess, subverting maybe some of the doctrines of the church or the stances of the church on our show, we have a significant audience that listens to us. I would feel some responsibility there if we were trying to draw people away from standard doctrines, right? And so we would have to censor ourselves if we had something that we felt was particularly wrong in the church that needed to be changed. There would be a sense of restraint that we would have to display, don't you think? Or would you feel comfortable just like throwing it out there?
Yeah, well, no, I agree. You gotta be. It's not easy here, yeah, because we don't want to just throw it out there.
And is that good or bad for the church?
That's what the hard thing is to say. I think many have felt that we were in a place finally, 20 years after the September 6th, that we could just be open and just discuss things, and it's, you know, and it's going to be okay. But then look at the other side. You've got a guy like Rock Waterman, who's also under a disciplinary council, who's a more conservative Mormon. And as far as I know, he has no movement behind him, but he's written posts basically arguing that Mormons have left the truer faith that was established by Joseph Smith, that we ourselves as a church have apostatized from what was restored. And of course, yeah. I understand the church having a problem with that as an idea, but I also don't see him out there recruiting for any kind of a movement. He's just writing about stuff. So I don't know. It's a
man.
We're in a funky place. It's painful to see what's happening. And one area where I do understand people having a gripe is that we keep saying this is all done at the local level, that it started at the local level and the church has had nothing to do with it. But then you see how it's all happening at once with 12 or 13 people. People have told me during the September 6th, it was the same thing. Everything was at a local level, even though six people got excommunicated all in September of the same year, you know? And I can agree with those who feel frustration that if the church is calling shots from up top in one way or another, or just kind of not, you know, prodding people along, that it could own up to that a little bit. I wouldn't be offended if they did, but it does seem a little more disingenuous if we keep claiming that this is just the action of a bishop and a stake president in Virginia, and it has nothing to do with Salt Lake.
Which is a little bit disingenuous.
A little bit disingenuous, at least so it seems. I mean, maybe all they're doing is just feeding them stuff from the Strengthening Members Committee, but it still seems, the timing seems odd. So I feel for everyone who is bothered by that, for sure.
Yeah.
So we
can move on. So Kate Kelly is done. Unless she does anything crazy this next week, we won't have to talk. I mean, she's sort of reached Glenn Beck level for us, where we love her. We love her because she's lots to talk about, but we're not so sad when she got her own network.
Isn't it funny how this kind of came out of nowhere? I feel like this came so quickly, though. Because remember, after General Conference, we felt that ordained women kind of died down. We didn't hear much for a while. But then...
Yeah, it did. Well, it did. It fizzled.
It died down, but then it's because about 5-6 weeks after General Conference, they came out with the six discussions. And then it snowballed from there, everything that's going down. You know, and it's sad to read the different accounts. You've got Kate Kelly claiming she's never even talked to her bishop, but then previously she said she'd counseled with her bishop repeatedly, and he knew what she was doing. And then you've got the letters showing that she's met with people. There's a lot of he said, she said going on with all of this. And Kate Kelly's still at
classic.
She still says, I have records, and I have never had these conversations. So she's straight up saying they are.
How do you have a record that you've never had a conversation?
Well, you know what I mean. Say, tell me when this phone call happened.
I caught you in a trap.
She will look through her phone records and show.
I'm like Korihor.
You're like Korihor.
And there will be no Messiah.
Sometimes I feel bad for Korihor. I mean, was being.
He got a bad rap, you know, as an Antichrist.
Was being rendered moot and then trodden down really a appropriate punishment?
Who's to say? Yeah. All right, give us another one, Jeff.
Let's see. Well, the other big news, and unfortunately has not taken up much time this week because of all the other stuff, gay marriage basically struck down in Utah. Well, sorry, ban on gay marriage struck down, gay marriage upheld, I guess you could say. A federal appeal.
Wait, the ban on banning gay marriage was upheld?
The ban on the ban on gay marriage.
The state is not allowed to restrict gay marriage. Yes,
the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, the highest federal court so far to rule on a lot of this sort of stuff, struck down Utah's gay marriage ban. So it becomes laws in the six states covered by the 10th Circuit, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Wyoming, and Utah, that there is no legal reason why gays cannot marry. So it's basically striking down the stay that Utah has. There are still some legal things in play that it won't take effect right away, and people are still going to be chit-chatting back and forth. But it's a big deal. I mean, this is another... this is another blow for people trying to prevent gay marriage. So that's going down. Keep it. This just broke on Wednesday.
Well, so what does that mean for the church? Is that that's essentially setting the precedent for all the other states, right?
One could argue. I mean, the 10th Circuit only covers its specific circuit, but it's definitely establishing a precedent. And a precedent in some states where you would think they wouldn't even care. Like, I don't know if there's a big push for gay marriage in Oklahoma. So this might be even reaching into other states that had nothing on the books and then telling them, guess what? Now gay marriage is allowed. So it could reach to that level. What it means for the church.
Now gay marriage is allowed, or now you're not allowed to ban gay marriage?
Not allowed to ban gay marriage. That's the key. Yeah. So what it means for the church, I think what we've talked about before, the inevitability of...
It means what it means, yes.
Of temple weddings no longer being your civil ceremony. Also of note, I've heard through the rumor mill, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, the church might be amending its some of its marriage rules.
Could the wait for a year sort of stuff?
The wait for the year. Only, I believe, not for, but in the case of if you were to have, if you're a convert, whatever reason, you have family members who can't go, they would cease to, as it's viewed, penalize you for getting married civilly and allow you instead to get married civilly and same day or whatever is the reasonable temple distance, however they do it, and then just go and get sealed. On top of that, it wouldn't. Huh. So I've heard this is actually coming. We'll see if it does, but the bees are telling.
I actually think that makes sense.
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah, as long as it's not a worthiness issue, it's fine. Let people do what they want.
Yeah, I don't either. Let's see. Clayton Christensen was misquoted, he says, on same-sex marriage. He was interviewed by, who's the guy, Michael Fitzgerald, about how an article called "How the Mormons Conquered America: The Success of the Mormon Religion in Study of Social or in Social Adaptation," and he quoted him as saying, as Clayton Christensen saying, "I think I'm farther along than the church on this one, relating to gay marriage and where that is." And Clayton came out and said, "This is not true. I did not say this. I support wholeheartedly every phrase in the family of proclamation of the world, and I sustain the first presidency in the Quorum of the 12." And he's kind of making the rounds with that. He's pushing it out there, just saying, "Hey guys, just so you know, I'm not thinking I'm further along than the church on this." So
yeah,
there you go.
Open letter. So don't think that Clayton Christensen.
Message received, Clayton. Thank you,
Al. Do you want some temple socks?
Yeah, I'll buy a pair.
Did you buy any yet?
They're not good material. I'm not like, give me something. Show that you put a little effort.
Yeah,
into
for
this.
Charging $13.95 a pair, they look like pretty poorly made.
Yeah,
socks.
Give me three pair for $13.95, maybe.
Yeah, the cost is a lot. I mean, I could spend less than that on socks at Nordstrom. Seriously.
I can call China and I can have those exact same socks done and it'll cost me 40 cents a pair.
I think you should do it. And then we'll do it on soccer.com.
I'm not being facetious. Yeah, I've already bought 300 pair and sold them through.
Anyway, these are socks that you can buy online and they will be for sale at the Manti pageant. Which cracks me up.
I should go to the
I never
Manti
thought about
pageant.
There being vendors at the pageants. That just never crossed my mind.
Is the Manti pageant this weekend? I'm going.
I don't know. I just never realized that. I guess they probably have them at Hill Cumorah as well. Vendors selling LDS-related things. There's like a whole cottage industry around the
They're LDS wares?
The pageants. I had no idea. Just didn't think about it. Oh, that's beautiful. So go and
buy. It is the 24th through the 28th. It's going to be there. I'm going.
So it's now? Well, it's in a month then.
No, June.
If it's
now.
Oh, so it's right now. That means you need to like go.
Yeah, I'm going to go Saturday.
Have you ever done a session? Have you ever done a session at the Manti Temple?
I have. It's lovely.
The best. It's the best temple in the church. I'm serious.
Please, Jeff. I've been to Cardston, all right?
Thanks. Cardston was really cool, but Manti is super cool. Cardston was awesome, though. That was great.
Jeff, please. I'm sorry. I can't listen to this.
You liked Cardston a lot, is what you're saying.
Let's see. And lastly, a quick mention. No, we didn't have anything else.
Well, you put the board game.
Oh, yeah.
You put the
convert that.
There's
a convert makes board games.
A convert
there's,
makes
there's board some board games, some church related board games going around. This isn't news. This isn't interesting.
Bear in
it's
mind though, this
one.
Isn't just a random guy. This guy's company actually makes apples to apples.
What?
Yeah.
And they're making Mormon themed board games?
Or just family friendly board games. So the guy's legit. It's not like he's just some huckster trying to sell his board games. He's clearly made it happen.
Ooh. I like
guys,
that.
Guys, go find him at some kind of exhibit.
And his name is Al Waller. I like Al.
I hate Al.
I think he's going places. Anyway, Jeff, what a delightful week this has been.
Thank you.
I'm glad we got to slog through all this Kate Kelly stuff and
and
get to the other side of it.
And to our listeners, thank you for being patient with it. I think some people are wondering why it's still being discussed. But a prominent activist being exed hasn't happened in 20 years. So it is pretty big news as far as Mormon stuff goes. So
yeah.
So you got to bear with us. Hopefully, I'm sure this will still come up. But next week, we'll get back to, the usual stuff. Casseroles and, things no one cares about.
It's delightful.
Don't worry. We'll get back to the same frivolity.
Join us next week for more rapping and news. Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh. You can find us. You know where to find us, but everybody else, you can find us on thisweekinmormons.com or email us. We'd love to hear from you. Contact at thisweekinmormons. Always a good bit of chit-chat. Or, lastly, facebook.com/
and Twitter. All those great things. Oh. I'm going to give a shout-out as well to the great blog, ldschurchgrowth.blogspot.com, where I learned this week that Germany got its first stake since 1987. That's where you can learn things like that. Good
they
news,
did it.
Good news for
all
everybody.
Right, good.
And
yep, that's great.
Also listen to Sunday School Bonanza, our Sunday School podcast, where we go through gospel doctrine lessons. And Third Hour of Power by Grady, that guy who's doing it.
Grady, what a guy, doing great.
He's a beautiful
right.
human.
Jeff, you're delightful, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Al. I love you, and I'll talk to you soon. Have a great week, everyone, and keep the faith. Don't get down. A lot of people are down right now. Get happy.
Don't be
go
down.
Go watch Mormon Bachelorette audition videos. It'll change your whole day.
They're awful.
It'll change your whole day. Okay. This has been This Week in Mormons,
right,
everyone. Bye, Al. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
What I need is a good defense.